Okay. Good morning. We are on Tet Vav Amud Bet. Only about halfway down Tet Vav Amud Bet. We've got, as we have the last couple of weeks, a lot of narrative. Agadah, we're going to charge through, going through the episode of the Megillah, and hopefully by the end of today, we'll basically be at the end of the Megillah, where the Jews are saved, and Mordechai is essentially second in command, and there will be, I don't think we'll get to this, the last few lines of Daf Bet, of Amud Bet, of Tet Zion, there'll be an astonishing remark that there is something that comes before saving lives, and it is not the big three that need to be avoided. So we'll probably do that next week. That's where we'll start. But that's where we'll be heading toward the end of the Megillah. We are on Tet Vav Amud Bet, which Tet Vav itself took a big diversion, because we got to the point in the story where Ahasuerus removes his ring, gives it to Haman, and we said, whoa, that single moment was more powerful than decades of prophecy. For years and years, people warned, don't do it, it'll be awful, don't do it, it'll be awful, don't do this, you know, think about Yerushalayim, and all that has to happen is the king removes his ring, gives somebody some power, and everybody's in a state of panic. And said, oh my gosh, why did nobody warn us? And so the Gemara starts describing what the purpose of prophecy is, and then we go down how many prophets there were. There were thousands of prophets, more than the people who left Egypt, but only the important eternal messages were recorded in perpetuity. The sages curate, of course, what they consider to be these eternally resonant messages. We know there were seven prophetesses who had eternal messages. We proved that each of the seven were prophets or prophetesses in a particular way. And then we headed back to the story of the Megillah, where Esther herself is, of course, the prophetess. And she takes a risk. She walks into Ahasuerus's chamber, royal chambers, without permission. And we said that the staff, the pole, extended, and then there was a big debate how much it extended. Was it 12 amot, 200 amot, or anything in between? And we said that there are two other occasions where there were miraculous extensions. One is the ama, the arm of Bitya, when she reaches out to get Moshe. It says that the Torah actually says she sent her ama to go and get, and the usual translation is ama means a maid, and she sent the maid to get it, but Chazal say ama can also be slightly more Aramaic, the arm breadth. So she sent her arm and it miraculously reached out and grabbed the baby. And another miraculous extension was the crowns of Og, Melech HaBashan, the giant whose teeth grew outward into the side of a mountain so he couldn't get it off his head. We'll leave that story for another time. And then we get to Tet Vav Amud Bet, where we're up to. And it's worth not completely forgetting why we're talking about any of this at all. It's true we're talking about it because it's from the Megillah, but why is it in this perek? Why is it at this point in the perek? This is not where we start. It's not like Masechet Megillah begins with a reflection on the Megillah. It begins with very technical rabbinic halachic questions. When can you read it? Which day can you read it? Which part of the city are you in? Which part of the country? Where are you living in the world? And we've said the basic premise of the whole Masechet, in the same way that we said Tanit had a premise and Makot had a premise kind of beneath it, Megillah is how to subsist in diaspora, how to survive as a Jewish people in the diaspora, which is why we started, how flexible can you be when injecting hope into a population? And the last mission of this perek, the 10th, stated, Yerushalayim never lost its sanctity. It doesn't matter that the temple was obliterated, that we were scattered and sent into exile. Even though Shiloh lost its sanctity, and when it was in Gilgal it lost its sanctity, the Mikdash in Yerushalayim never ever loses its sanctity. And then we start talking about the Megillah. Essentially, that's what the people had given up on. They were all at this party. They weren't malicious people. They weren't eating treif. They had specially, kosher tinfoil meals at this palace do. But it was celebrating the end of the 70 years for Ahasuerus. 70 years have passed. You haven't been redeemed. You can still be Jewish, but just forget about Yerushalayim have any connection to you. Forget about the hope of having your own national autonomy. And then that leads to disaster. And that's one of the central premises of this Masechta, is the rabbis are not pushing at this point in history to retake the land. They're not pushing for a Zionist rebellion, revolution. they're still under the shadow of two failed rebellions where Rome completely quashed the Jewish population, slaughtered everybody, and sent them into exile. What they are trying to do is, how do we sustain a people in exile so that they don't assimilate and lose their identity? And the suggestion for the Chazal in the Megillah, in Masechet Megillah, is if you let go of hope that you will return, that you have a national origin, that you have a particular, and not peculiar as in weird, but peculiar as in specific identity, you will fade away. And that's what happened to the 10 tribes of the north when the Assyrians took them and nobody knows what happened to them. They just dissipated. How do we hold on to our identity? And it's the study of the Megillah through that basis. And then that last Mishnah was, you need to know that Yerushalayim never loses its sanctity. We face that way when we pray. We have to hold on to that. And that explains why the coming chapters seem arbitrary. We're going to talk about the purpose of laning. We're going to talk about how often you lane, how many people get an aliyah when you lane. We're talking about the rules around a shul. What is this doing in Megillah? I would think, where do we talk about liturgy? Which Masechta talks about liturgy? Brachot. We talk about the brachot, the Amidah, Kriyat Shema. That's where the rules of the shul are. But if the shul is understood as an institution that captures our identity, it's kind of a civic space where we come together as citizens of an eternal people. And this is where we capture a Mikdash Ma'at and we hold on to our identity. That's why the rules of shul are in here. You want to sustain a people, you need to inject them with national hope, stories of national redemption. You need to have a civic space where it is not just a municipal hall of Queens or Jamaica States Association, but you've got to have like a Jewish space. Wherever you are in the world, the Jew can go there and feel like, I'm part of this people. And that's why these rules will come up here. And we're now reflecting on the end of the Megillah, which is, how do we reinvigorate a people with that hope that they're attached to something different and distinct? And there'll actually be a level of criticism levied at Mordechai for the decisions he makes in the wake of the redemption, where it seems to be he becomes ensconced in politics. And he says, I was successful, I protected the people, I'm going to keep my role in politics. And Chazal, the Sanhedrin at the time, many had some choice words suggesting he had betrayed the very aim he was trying to inject in the people. So, Tetvav on the bed in the middle. First one, the word on the line is Al Tikri. Last word on the line is Grey Vayomer. That's where we're up to, Vayomer. So, Esther has now walked into the palace. The staff has extended, reached out to her thousands of feet. Vayomer Melech Esther, and the king says to Esther, Malka, Ma bekeshatech ad chatzim malcha v'tiyas, tell me whatever you want. Half the kingdom I'll give you. What won't he give her? The other half. Chazal say there's always something to worry about. Chatzim malcha lo kol malcha. He doesn't say I'll give you everything. He says I'll give you half. V'lo davar shechotzitz malcha. So I'm not going to give you the whole malcha, and I'm also not going to give you something that disrupts the kingdom. I'll give you half, but I'm not going to give you something that ruins it or the whole of it. My Nihu, what is he talking about? Binyan Beit HaMikdash. He's essentially saying, I will give you anything. I'm not going to give you the temple, though, because that is disruptive. That is, again, going to keep the people attached. Their loyalties are going to be elsewhere, and I can't have that. That seems to be a resistance in that moment. Yavo Melech Vamar Al Mishteh. So she says, you know what I want? All I want, I just wanted to invite you to a party. I'm going to make a little party for you. Come along with Haman. Tana Rabbanan. Now the rabbis say, Ma rata Esther Shizumana Haman. Why did Esther? She wanted to have a conversation. This was basically, he walked into the palace. He says, what do you want? Esther, I'll give you half the kingdom. And she says, we need to talk. And obviously, there hadn't been enough sitcoms yet, so he didn't realize that this was a major emergency. He said, we need to talk. And Chazal wonder, why is Haman coming? She's got something to say. Tell him quietly, you know, you've got an audience with the king. You can do whatever you like. You can tell him how awful Haman is. Why are you inviting Haman? And we're now going to see 12 possible explanations for what calculation Esther is making inviting Haman. Number one, Rabbi Lezomer. Pachim tamna lo. She was setting a trap for him. As it says, Yishal chanam lifneim lepach. You should lay a table before them as a trap. So Rabbi Lezomer says she was making a trap. Rabbi Shubba says, Mebet avia lamda. She was learning this from Jewish ancestors, as it says in Mishlei. Imra avsona echa, if your enemy is hungry, feed them bread, which is kind of similar. You're setting this up for a fall, etc. And if you give them food, it'll satisfy them. Reme omer, meaning that reading is maybe Haman will kind of move on from his dislike of Haman, of Mordechai rather, and let it go. Reme omer, kadesh lo yitol eitzer v'yimrod. Now she had Haman there because if she tells Achashverosh that Haman's awful, Haman might hear about this and then plot some sort of uprising against him, but if he's stuck in the room, he can't take counsel or form a rebellion. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kadesh la Yakiru Basha Yedit, it was so that she would not be thought of as a Jew. She's inviting Haman to a party, and everybody knows out there that he hates the Jews. If he's invited, there's not going to be any suspicion. Rabbi Nachamya says, Kadosh la Yom Yisrael Achav Yeshanam Beveit HaMelfi Yesichu Datim Ar Racham. This is an odd moment where she says, I'm trying to provoke the Jews to think that I'm not on their side. She's inviting Haman to a party because if they think to themselves, I was going to use some examples. You know, you think about American politics. Everyone thinks, you know, there's a Jew in the White House. We'll be fine. So there's a Jew in the palace. Haman's got stuff going on, but Esther's there. We'll be fine. So she's inviting Haman to a party. So they think, oh, maybe she's not going to help us. We need to carry on praying. And she wanted to keep the Jews, shelo yasichu da'atan min arachamim, that they don't stop imploring God for help by just relying on her. Rabbi Yossi says, kol shei matzui la b'chol eit. This was so Haman would be around her at any time. Meaning so suddenly, you know, a good moment happens. Oh, I've just thought of a good argument. Or he's just made a mistake. He's going to be right there at the party. She can get him in trouble. Shimon ben Manasseh Omer, Ula yargish hamakom v'yaseh lanu nes. He says, no, maybe God at some point will start feeling sorry for me and will perform a miracle. Rabbi Shu ben Karcha says, Ask below panem, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I'm inviting Haman, and this is like a kamikaze mission. I'm inviting Haman, and I'm going to smile at him a lot during the meal, maybe a few winks, and Achashverosh is going to be sitting there going, what are these two up to? And then he will kill us both. Kadesh Yarag hu vihi. She's saying, that's why she said, avaditi, avaditi. I'm going in, I'm going to create this scenario, I'm going to die, and I'll save the people by getting Haman killed as well. Rabbi Gamliel Omer, melech hafaf chachad haya. No, he was a... it's hard to know whether we should translate this as he was a contrarian or he was very changeable. There's a better word than that.
Malleable,
fickle in his disposition. So she said, you know what? Haman's in the king's good graces right now. But if he hangs out too much with the king, he'll be like, who is this irritating guy? Just won't leave me alone. And suddenly he'll become the enemy and the king will hate him. So she said, you know, the king's fickle. I'll just leave Haman around and eventually he'll get angry with him. We need one more view, he says, from the Moda Ai. The Tanya Rav Elazar Moda Ai Omer, because Rav Elazar said, Kinatan b'melech, kinato b'sarim. She wanted the king to become jealous of him and the other officers to become jealous of him. So she picked Haman to come and nobody else so that the king would be suspicious and the whole court would be like, why does he get all this and not me? So he would become isolated, essentially. There's some overlap between a number of these views, but they are independent in many ways. And it does beg the question as to why we're getting 12 different explanations for Esther's calculations here. And we're not done. Rabba Omar, Rabba says, view 11, Lefi Shever Gaon, quoting Proverbs, that before destruction comes pride. So she's basically building up Haman, because the more proud you become, the worse the fall will be. And the rule in Proverbs is, when you become haughty and arrogant, you make mistakes, and then you get destroyed. Abai Rabam Tavayu, last view. Abai and Rava, both of them said, B'chomem ashirit mishatehem, when they get heated, your enemies, you should make them a party. And the end of that verse is, and then they'll get drunk, and they'll sleep a long sleep. So basically, she thought, I'll get him drunk. And, you know, maybe he'll get sick, or I don't know what, something will happen to him. Ashkei Rabba Rabu Eliyahu. At some point, Rabba Rabu found Eliyahu and said, Eliyahu, I've just heard 12 different explanations as to what Esther was thinking. What actually was she thinking? Come on, Chazia Esther, Va'avdahachi. What was she thinking that she did what she did? Amale Eliyahu says, Kechulu Tanai, Kechulu Amorai. She followed everybody's view, meaning she was a Machmet, so she followed everybody's view. Or that, you know, at some point, it's impossible to identify what was your particular calculation. She just thought, intuitively, this is what needs to happen, and he'll be isolated, and maybe there'll be mercy from on high, and there'll be jealousy flying around, and he'll become proud, and maybe the king will suspect us of something, and, you know, whatever happened, happened, but I know this needs to happen for all these reasons, and Chazal are just kind of extracting all 12 parts of the political wisdom. Come on in. V'yisapel am Hamanet, Kvod Ashrov Rov Banav. So then Haman starts recounting how wealthy he is, how rich he is, and Varov Vanav, we might translate in the greatness of his sons, but here it's understood as, and his many children. How many did he have? Kamarov Vanav, how many children he has, but it's called many. How many children does Haman have? We usually assume 10. Amarav Lamed, he had 30. Asara Metu, 10 died at some point in their youth. Asara Nitlu, 10 were hung that we know about or hanged. Asara Machzirin al-Ptachim, and 10 became impoverished and had to beg on the door. So it's true, we see Asara B'nei Haman were hanged, but there were more. There were 10 who already passed away, and there were 10 who, as a result of his downfall, had to go knocking on doors. Right, that's basically the reason that they didn't include all of them. And if you think that's hard, there's another view coming. Rabbanan Amri, the rabbi said, by the way, the ones who were knocking on doors, it wasn't 10, it was 70 who went knocking on doors. So he has, how many has he got now?
90
children. 10 died in their youth, 10 were hanged, and 70 went knocking on doors. Paul Zeresh, well, we're assuming he had other wives as well. Otherwise, that would be a difficult... difficult feat is one word. Dichtiv. How do we know it's 70? We're still not done, by the way. How do we know it's 70? Seveim belechem nisgru. It says in Shmuel that the those who are full will be going around trying to find bread, and we should read it not as seveim, bless you, but shivim as 70. Antigre seveim ele shivim. By the way, another view. Rumba abba kulan matay mushmona havu. You wondering how many kids someone actually had? 208. That's how many sons Haman had. So he had a huge, and this is Haman saying, do you know how big my family is? Do you know how much wealth I have? No one can take me down. So it's an astonishing personal feat in the sense that he had so many people who loved him by nature. Shneimar, how do we know he had 208? As it says, Varov Vanav. Varov Vagamatria Matan Varbesav. Hold on, but what's the Gematria of Rov? What's Varov? Va?
12.
Plus 208. So what do you start with? Vav. Two Vavs is 12. Bet, 14. Resh, 214. So the Gemara says, we're talking about that's 214. Amar Nachman, Varav Ketiv. But if you look in the text, it's actually written without a middle Vav. So you take off. 208 children. Yeah. So there's quite a lot of kids. Full stop. Belaila Hahu, Nedadashnat Tamelach. The first party has happened. The king goes to bed. And he is restless. He's rolling back and forth. This is the beginning of chapter 5, if I'm not mistaken. Arum Tanchum, Nedadashnat Malko Shel Olam. And this is a lot of people who read the Megillah put a lot of emphasis on this sentence, because the understanding is it can't just be the king didn't sleep well, because it doesn't say Belaila Hu Nedadashnat Achashverosh, it's Shnat HaMelech. The king couldn't sleep. Who couldn't sleep? Arum Tanchum says Malko Shel Olam, the king of the world couldn't sleep. This is talking about God. He was up to something, so to speak. Of Rabbanan Amri, the rabbis say, Nadiru Elyonim, Nadiru Tachtonim. It's not just that God couldn't sleep. We mean the whole cosmos was astir. We had the upper world was kind of shaking. The lower world was shaking. Things were unsettled. Rava Amar, Shnat Tamil Achashverosh Mamash. Rava says, no, it's just talking about Achashverosh, he couldn't sleep. This is part of the plot, and the fact that he couldn't sleep is what's going to lead to what happens next. What happened? Naflale Milta Badate, he had this nagging thought in his mind. Amar, he said, Mai dekam dekamande zimde Esther la Haman. He said, why did Esther invite Haman to our party? And he'd obviously not read these 12 views. So why was Haman at this party? She wanted to talk to me. Who is this Haman? So you can see one of her ideas is kind of lodging a seed, where he is getting worried, jealous, suspicious. Dilma Itzaka Shakli Elaveda Hu Gavila Miklele. At this point, he's not suspecting an affair. He seems to be quite self-confident about that. He's more anxious about his political fate, which tells you he doesn't seem to be that worried about Esther and her affections for him, and is more concerned about his standing. Hada Amar, and then he went on to say, Ihachi lo have a gavid the rachimli davi maidali. He said, if they're planning to kill me, is there nobody in the whole kingdom that would report on me? And this is what we call intelligence confidence. Lahavdil, we've seen this, you know, in our recent history, October 7th. How many times do we think there's probably hundreds of attempted terrorist acts all the time? The FBI are thwarting it, or the CIA is thwarting it, or the Shin Bet. We have these thoughts. And Hashirosh thinks, maybe they're plotting against me. And he thinks, but I've got like a huge spy network, a whole intelligence infrastructure. Somebody would tell me. And then he thinks, maybe somebody is unhappy. maybe. And of course, we're all still wondering, you know, what on earth happened on October 7th? There are so many questions that need to be answered. We just kind of let it rest until the time comes. And he's sitting there thinking, maybe there's somebody mm-hmm. within my infrastructure who's unhappy with me. Hada Amay said, Dilma ikke inishta ava beta vutevilai parate mishum da hachiminai ishi vlo migli li miyat. Maybe there's somebody in my spy network who already helped me and I didn't show him adequate gratitude. So everyone thinks, what's the point in saving the king? It's not like it gets me anything. So this is when he, and we're all familiar because we're all taught this as kids. That's what the king was thinking. The Megillah doesn't say that. He was sitting there thinking and said, I can't sleep. Read me, you know, give me the rabbi's latest drasha. I need to fall asleep. But this is that the Chazal assume that there's something nagging at him in particular that he asked for this chronicle. Maybe I'm unstable politically. Haman being at the party really disturbed me. So it says, bring the chronicles, and they were read. And Chazal say, what does it say? And they were read. Say, and his servants read them. What does it mean they were read? His now assumption is, or the assumption of Chazal is, his servants had no interest in Mordechai being rewarded. In fact, they were desperate for this story not to get out. Why would you want to reward a Jew? I mean, the whole infrastructure is bent against Jews. They're all under the sway of Haman. Why are they reading this story? So the first thing is it was Nikraim. This was not them reading. It was being read. It was kind of almost automated, forced out of them that they were reading this. V'matse katuv, and it was found, how would you translate the word katuv? It was found written. Not, oh, and there was writing found, but written is, to use, if we were using the appropriate grammatical, it's like the passes pluperfect or something. It's not like, oh, and they found writing, but they found it was written, which sounds like very immediate. Katav mubayle, should have said they found writing. Why is it saying they found it written onto our daf tet zayin at the top? Shimshai mochek the Gavriel kotev. Shimshai, the aide of Achashverosh, was reading the chronicle, mm-hmm. and as he was reading, he was editing. He was trying to like cross out the story of Mordechai, and Gavriel kept filling it back in. So it was found written, meaning it was like freshly written, and it kept reappearing. So firstly, they didn't want to read it. Secondly, they tried to erase it, and it kept kind of bursting in. So here, Amar Basi Darash Reb Shila Ishkvar Tamarta, he said, just as favorable writing down here for Israel can't be erased, so writing up there cannot be erased, of course. So don't worry that, you know, when we deserve a just rewards up in Shamayim, that the aggressive angels up there are going to start eradicating. You can't overcome it. If they can't do it down here, they can't do it up there. Full stop. Lo nase mo davar. And as they're reading, Achashverosh says, did you do anything for him? And they all say, no, you didn't reward Mordechai for what he did. Again, why are they helping Mordechai? Amar Rava, lo mipnei she'ovin et Mordechai. Eventually, it's not because they loved Mordechai, ela mipnei she'sonei imet Haman, because they hated Haman. So now there is distrust and dishappiness, dissatisfaction building among the ranks that Haman's getting invited to parties. He's getting ahead of himself. And how important it is to keep your friends close. I think it gets your enemies closer, but not even your enemies. Just keep the people you need on your side, show them appreciation. And he did not do that. So they said, yeah, Mordechai needs something. We're going to get this Haman really irritated. So what happens in the meantime? Hechin lo, Haman was busy building the tree. And Chazal say he was preparing it for him. Who's the him? Right, so he thought it was for Mordechai, but Tano, you should teach it, lo heichin. For him, he was preparing it, meaning he was setting up a tree for his own downfall. Vasa kein le Mordechai. Again, we're skipping forward in the story. Haman is found in the courtyard, he comes on in, and the king says, come on in, I've just heard that we need to bless you, we need to reward somebody. What would you say we should do to reward someone who's done something good for the king? And he says, oh, you should dress him up in royal clothes, put him on the king's horse, bring him around town and have somebody call out, this is what's done for the one the king wants to honor. And then he's getting ready, says, so should I go get things in, get things rolling? And he says, yes, you should. And do it for Mordechai. And he goes, oh, no. Amale manu Mordechai. He says, hold on a minute. Who's Mordechai? Amalo HaYehudi. Because when he said, do it for Mordechai, he says, do it for Mordechai HaYehudi, HaYoshev B'Shar HaMelech, which seems like a lot of details, to say Mordechai. And this is similar to rabbinic practice, like with the Akedah, when Hashem says to Avram, take Bincha Yechidcha Asher Ahavta, And Chazal say, oh, he said binchan. He said, I got two sons. He said, shahav, he says, I love them both. He said, yechidcha, you're only one. He said, oh. And it's kind of a repeated line of interrogation. So here, why does he say all of them? Because Haman's response was, Manu Mordechai, who's Mordechai? Amalei Yehudi, the Jewish Mordechai. Amalei Tuva Mordechai Ikub Yehudai. Saying, there are a lot of Mordechais out there. You're saying you should get Haimi Goldman. It's like, which one are you talking about? Amalei, he says, Yosef Bashar HaMelech, the one who's sitting in the king's gate, which seems to suggest there were many, many Jews, many Mordechai Jews, but there was only one who had the talents, the skills, the precociousness, the interest in being involved in the political system. Amalei, and Haman said, you want me to do all of that for Mordechai? Sagalei b'chad diskotcha, unami b'chad nara. Maybe all he needs, you know, he did you a favor, understand it, so give him a little bit of money or give him a little bit of an estate. What do you need all this performance for? At which point he says, Amalei, hanami havlei, you give him that too. So quit while you're ahead. He's giving Mordechai estate, money, going to lead him around the town. And he says, that's why he says, Al tefel davri makol asher debarti. Don't leave anything out from what you said. Why does he end up repeating that? Chazal say, because he added extra things, which we just noted. Vikach Haman et halavush v'et asur. So Haman took the dress, the clothing, and the horses, and he went. And that block of green we're now going to read is a fascinating rabbinic insight into what they presume the exchange between Haman and Mordechai is. We don't, again, the story moves at quite a pace. It leaves a lot between the lines. We assume he goes, Mordechai gets on the horse, and he leads him around. But what was that moment like when he was getting him dressed and putting him up on the horse? And what was their interaction like? Do we hear Haman and Mordechai talk at all to each other? There's not a test, I don't remember. I don't think we hear them exchanging words with each other. So what was their relationship? Was it just kind of a silent, you know, stare-off? Or did they have any words together? So what we've said, Chazal, a couple of pages ago, said that originally they have a backstory. You know, Disney makes all these backstories, Maleficent, and I can't remember the other ones, but the clown with Batman. Say again?
Joker.
The prequel, right, where they start, the Joker. There you go. So Haman was a slave of Mordechai's household, is what the assumption was a couple of days ago, and that's why he's so aggravated with him, and he can't kind of get out of his mind. He said, Hakol ze anishavali, all my wealth and prospects do nothing for me when I see that man. So let's look at their exchange. So when Mordechai arrived, when Haman arrived on the scene with the horse and the clothing and was about to put Mordechai on top of the horse, he saw that he was sitting there teaching the rabbis the laws of kmitza. What a kmitza! It's funny how many of you just went like that. Yeah, kmitza is when you have a mincha offering, a flower offering. Part of what you would do, you would have to take some of it to burn. That would not be eaten or cooked. And it would be a kmitza, which is a measure of these three fingers. You would grab in the oil and then you would rub off the end with your thumb and your little finger, hurting my teeth for some reason. And then that's the amount it would be. So, and there's a debate. How wide do your fingers have to be? Do they have to be tight? Do you rub off everything, etc., etc.? So Mordechai was going through these laws. When Mordechai saw Haman coming, with that face and with a horse, Mirtat, he got suddenly terrified. This is not going to go well. Amar Rabban, and he said to the rabbis in the middle of the shir, Hai Rashi, the Miklo Kanavshi, he's come to kill me. Zil Makame, Dilechavim Bekachalato, you should get away so you don't get burned by his rage. Meaning, he's unpredictable, he's violent, he's about to kill me. Just get out of here because you're going to get hit in the crossfire. Bahi Shaita, Nitatev Mordechai, Vekamle Let Saluta. At that point, Mordechai wraps himself up and he starts praying. Ata Haman v'yatev leikamayu. Haman sits down and says, oh, he's just a very long marav, this Mordechai. I'm going to be sitting here for a while. So, Ata Salik Mordechai, he waits for Mordechai to finish praying, because he's not there to kill him. He's there on the king's orders to give him a ride on the horse. Amalo, so he says to the other rabbis, B'maya Skito, what are you guys dealing? What are you studying? What are you learning today? Says to all the rabbis. So, it sees the rabbis didn't leave Mordechai's side. He said, leave. And they said, we're not, you know, over our dead bodies. We're staying here. He starts praying, and Haman arrives and says, so what are you guys up to today? Amrelein, they say to him, Bizman Shabita Mingdashkaya, while the temple was still around, Mandamanadev Mincha Maitele Kumse Dusulota, the people who would bring a flower offering would have to take out a kmitza flower. I mean, Kapalein, that would atone for them. This, you know, a very intriguing suggestion that this exchange is happening. Like, are the rabbis oblivious to his power? This is like, are they stalling technique? What are they thinking for Chazal in this moment as they're like talking through? Is this almost like meant to be, you know, farcical? You know, like the joke when you know, someone comes up to a Jew, holds a gun and says, say your prayers, and they say the bracha of like Al-Kiddush Hashem, and then they walk away and get distracted, and they go, you know, I said a bracha, then, you know, you mean interrupt. Like, this is strange, but it's kind of making a point. So they're talking about Kemitza to Haman, and Haman's response is, Amalahu, ata mile kumse kimcha deitchu, this small Kemitza of yours, v'dachi asara alfik ikari kasbe didi, this small Kemitza of yours has overwhelmed the thousands of dinars that I've invested in this project, because look what I've got to do now. And this is Chazal's way of communicating. You know, you can make all the investments in the world, you can have all the material resources in the world, but just studying a little bit about Kemitza, just a tiny little memory, and this speaks to the point we raised at the beginning, holding on to a tiny memory of temple life, of our origins, and our legacy, can overwhelm all the resources in the world. Of course, you know, and this would then lead into, we've outlasted every empire. We've had Persia and Rome and Babylon and Greece and the Turks, the Ottomans, the mandate of the British Empire, you know, what happened to that? Everything, and all we have is a little Kemitza. We have a tiny little memory that we hold on to and we repeat in shuls and schools, in our liturgy every day. And that's kept us around. And Haman is making this confession at this point that all my resources can't compete with that. Amalahu. Sorry, Amalei. And at this point, Mordechai finishes davening and he turns around because he hears Haman say, all my money in the world can't compete with your little Kemitza. Mordechai turns around and says, hey, Russia, you wicked guy. Eved shekana nechasim. If a slave acquires property, Eved lemivin nechasim lemi. Who does the property belong to? What's he saying? So this is how I think the Archgar translates it, is he's saying, hey, you are my slave. Do you think it's your money, your 10,000 dinars? Like, anything you buy is because of me. It's not necessary in the text to read it that way, but that is how a number of the commentaries read it. You could read it. He's saying, like, God's in charge of everything. Like, so you spend some money, very nice, but it's not your money. It's not your property. God's in charge. So I think, I mean, it seems to me it doesn't have to be as provocative as him saying, you slave of mine, but maybe it is, and we'll see in a minute, there's reason to think there is some hostility between these two. Amalei, so Haman responds, Kum levush hani mani rochavai susi debaile malka. Just, all right, fine, just get the clothes on, get on the horse, this is what the king wants of you. We don't imagine this kind of casual, deferential conversation happening, where Haman is saying, I understand, I'm a slave, I understand, just get on the horse, put the clothes on, this is what the king wants. And Mordechai's response is, Amalei, lo yechilna, I can't get on right now. I need to get a haircut, I need to trim my beard. I can't, you know, I can't get on the horse looking like this. I'm not fit for this, I didn't get any warning, I need to have a bath, I need to have a haircut. And at this point, Shadra Esther ve'isritinu l'kulei b'nei bani v'kulei omne. At this point, Esther gives everybody the day off. So all the barbers have gone home, all the bathhouse attendees have gone home. So Mordechai needs to get a bath and a haircut, but nobody's there to help him. So what's going to happen? Haman has to do it. He went to the barber house and nothing was there. So Haman had to bathe him and had to give him a haircut. So Esther and Mordechai are setting up this scenario where he's being demeaned repeatedly, has to serve Mordechai in different ways. He's listening to what lecture he was giving. He's being lectured by him, and now he has to bathe him. It also speaks to the immense confidence Mordechai has. If I had an enemy and I said, here, you get the scissors and you cut my hair, close my eyes, the insinuation is, you are completely impotent. Like, you're holding a weapon in your hand, and I'm just going to let you cut my hair because I've got zero concern. You can imagine that being incredibly painful to somebody who feels like I've got all the power. Badi kai, Shakalei, as he was cutting his hair and bathing him, Ingid ve'itnach, Haman starts sighing. He goes, oh, and you can feel the pain. Amalei, amai kaminched. And Mordechai turns around and says, what are you fussing about? Get on with it. You know, I want a nice haircut. Don't stop fussing at me. Amalei, and he said, you want to know why I'm sighing? Gavra da havechashiv leila malka, mekulei revavainhi. The guy who is more important to the king than all these other governors. Hashta lishrei balanai v'saper. Now I'm a bath attendee and I'm a barber. You know, this is so beneath me. Amalei, he says, Russia, hey, wicked guy. For love, Sapra Shakfar Kartsum Haita, were you not the barber in the town of Kartsum? Tana, how do I know? There was a brighter that taught. Haman Savashak Kartsum Hayasum Shtaim Shana. For 22 years, Haman was a barber. So he's now rubbing in, you've always been a barber, you've always been a slave. This is why, presumably, the commentators tie that remark to his past. This is Mordechai engaging in a pattern of psychological warfare, where he is saying, You need to bathe me. You need to clean me. I'm not scared of you. All the money that you have is mine. Don't think that you're now falling down the ladder. Your true self is this kind of bathhouse attendee. The fact that you're now in the palace, that's what's surprising, not the other way around. After he gave him a haircut and gave him, got him ready, he put on the clothes. Amalei and Haman just said to him, Sakvarachav, just get up onto this horse. And again, we're building, Chazal is building this up because it's trying to explain Haman's frustration. To lead a guy around on a horse, we think, you know, that's embarrassing. But it is almost theatrical that should be what tips him over the edge. It's like a 20-minute walk. You need to move past it. Nobody noticed. So what you're getting here is that Mordechai is burrowing into his mind. He's making him deeply unstable. And it seems that this is in partnership with Esther. She sends everybody home. They're trying. She's inviting him to the party with psychological warfare. She's trying to get the king to think they're having an affair, trying to get all his aides to get frustrated with him. They do get frustrated with him, which is why they say to the king, oh, that Haman, do something for Mordechai. Now Mordechai is burrowing into his brain. They're kind of tearing him down from the inside. So the political advice here is it's not just performative issues. You need to get in someone's head if you want to take them down. Amalei. So Mordechai responds when Haman said, get on the horse. Mordechai says, Lo yechilna, I can't really get up on the horse. And because I've been fasting for a few days. I'm really exhausted. I can't do the usual, you know, hop on up on the horse. Gachin Vasalik, so Haman got down on his knees so that Haman could climb up on his back onto the horse. Kisalik, and as Mordechai was climbing on his back to get on the horse, what did he do? By it bay, he kicked him. So as Mordechai is getting up, he kicks Haman in the back. Amalei, which point Haman says, doesn't it say in your scriptures you shouldn't celebrate the downfall of an enemy? Amalei, he says, Hani Mili Bizral, yeah, that's a Jewish enemy. But about, you know, you, it says you should kind of trample all over them when they're dead. So enjoy your time down there. Let's take another kick. Full stop. So that's kind of the bold exchange between Haman and Mordechai. So, you know, you get in your head how Haman is feeling as he's leading him around. It's not something he can really blot out. You could imagine leading him around and just thinking, I've been going to the parties at the palace. I'm going to a party tomorrow. This is just a technical thing the king wanted me to do. So we get in a psychological frame. He goes around saying, this is what the king wants to do for the people who should be honored. And this is a story I imagine many are familiar with. As he was walking through his street where he lived, his daughter, who was standing on the roof, saw this procession. And she assumed, of course, she assumed that the person on the horse was her father, being honored by the king, and the Mordechai was the one schlepping him about. So she took the bedpan, or the refuse bucket, and tipped it down, all the feces on top of her father's head, thinking, ha ha ha, you got you, Haman. Dale Ane lifted his eyes, and she saw, oh my God, that's my father. Nafla Meigra La Ara Umeta, and she fell off the roof to the ground and died. You know, is this like in despair she threw herself off, or she was just in a state of complete shock? Again, we're getting Haman's world is falling apart. His mind is being ripped to shreds, his self-esteem is being ripped to shreds, his family is falling from the roof, he's now covered in feces in the street. And now the Gemara is explained, and that's why the verse says the following. It's going to split into two parts. Yeshiv Mordechai Shar HaMelech. Mordechai returned to the king's gate. Amrav Shesha Sheshav L'Sakov L'Tanito. This indicates, it says Mordechai went back up to the king's gate, El Shar HaMelech, not Ber Shar HaMelech, to suggest that he'd already, this was not going to Mordechai's head. He went back into sackcloth, he went into fasting, which you were not allowed to do inside the palace, which is why he went up to the gate, is the suggestion. And Haman went home to in mourning, the Chafui Rosh, and in a state of his head was in despair. Why was both things? Evel albito, he was mourning for the loss of his daughter, V'chafurosh al shir alo, and he was despaired about what had happened to him. So he is completely ripped to shreds. And he goes home and he tells his wife and all his friends, in the verse it says he told all the people, all his friends, and then later it says, and he told all his chachamav. Amar Yochanan, why are they called chachamav? Yochanan said, says, you know, Jews don't have a monopoly on wisdom. And he had friends, and they happened to say correct things. So we call them wise. They are wise people. And what did they say? Zeresh now says this really strange thing. Because earlier on she said, yeah, you do whatever you want to Mordechai. Now she says, well, if Mordechai is from the Jewish people, you didn't tell me he was Jewish. If he was Jewish, you're going to lose, my friend. Why did it say Zerah HaYehudim? Should Zerah Yisrael would be more appropriate? So Amru Lei, what they really meant was, Mishar Shvatim Kati Yachanelei. I didn't know he was from Judah. But if he was just a regular Jew from, you know, Asher or Zvulun, you could take him. But if he's from one of these four tribes, you can't take him from Yehuda, Binyamin, Ephraim, Menashe. We've already described his background as being related to all of these in some distant sense. Yehuda Dichtiv, how do I know Yehuda you can't compete with? Yancha Be'erif Oivecha, because Judah is promised that he will have his hand over his enemies. Inach, and what about the others? Dichtiv, it says with Binyamin, Ephraim, and Menashe, Lifnei, Ephraim, and Binyamin, Menashe, Ored, Gvoratecha, their power will be unstoppable. Full stop. Kinafal tipol lefanav. You will surely fall before him. I'm sorry, that's not in gray. That's a quote from the Megillah. It says, you will surely fall before him if he's from one of these tribes. Why does it have to say, you will surely fall? Just say, nafal, you'll fall, or tepol. Why, both? Amro lo. This is how it is described. The Jewish people, this is speaking in the age of Avraham, are compared to the dust and compared to the stars. Kushen Yodin Yodin La'afar, when they are in decline, they go down to the dust. Kushen Olin Olin, and when they are on the ascendant, Olin Ad Kochavim, they go up to the stars. Meaning, right now, if the Jews are ascendant, Haman, you are going to just cascade to the bottom of the bucket of fate, because they are, when they go up, they're like the stars. So you're about to have a complete collapse. Vasarisei HaMelech HaGiru V'Avhilu. So the second part is about to start. They go and grab Haman V'Avhilu. And it's a strange turn, because in the first part it just says V'Yikachu. I can't remember the exact phrase, but it says, and they took him. Or V'Yimaru. They led him quickly. What is V'Avhilu? Melamej HaVivu B'Vahelad. It was confusion. So Haman, we're getting the sense, Haman arrives at the second party. It's not just a head party one night, then he had to lead him around on the horse, and then he came to the party the second night. But this second party, Haman is in a terrified, horrific state. His wife has told him, you're going to collapse. His advisors, who we've just been told are philosopher scientists, they know the truth, told him, the Jews are now on the ascendant. You're just going to fall rock bottom. He's already been teased that he's just a barber, that he's a slave. He's got no power. He's been kicked in the head by Mordechai. His daughter has spilled feces on him and has died from the roof. And he arrives kind of all shaken up. But Vahela at this party. And Esther turns to the king. Ki nicharnu anu va'ami. Me and my people have been sold. Ki einat sar shava ben ezek ha-melech. Because the enemy who hates me doesn't care about harming the king. At which point the king says, who are you talking about? Who is this enemy? Amra lo, she says to him, Sarze Enushav Nevezik HaMelech, why doesn't he care about the king? Ikni ba bevashti vekatla, he didn't like Vashti, got jealous and had her killed. Hashti ikni bididi, umibai lamak letli, and now he's jealous of me, wants to have me killed. So Vyoma Melech HaChashvesh, Vyoma Esther Malka. So the king responded, and the king said to Esther the Malka, of course the question is, Vyoma, Vyoma Lamele, it says, and the king said to Esther, why has he got to say it twice? Amr Baba Rabbi said, Bitchila Ali De Togum, and originally he would say things to the, the translator or the intermediary, and that would be repeated. Given to Amrele Midabet Shulkat, and when he found out that she was from a royal line, Miyad Vyomel Esther Malka, he turned around and said to Esther Malka, said, oh, you're worthy of my verbal attention, you're from a royal line as well. Sounds like he knows she's Jewish at this point, or he hasn't put two and two together yet, but he's figured out she's royal, so he'll speak directly to her. Toma Esther, and this is, we're now going to see for Chazal, there are four angelic interventions in this moment where everything could have got ruined. Everything we've just said, it's almost like the perfect tee-up. That's a golf reference, I think. Perfect setup for Haman to completely fall. And you can mess it up in this last moment. And we see that Esther was about to mess it up if it wasn't for an angel coming in and steering her in the right direction, suggesting, again, all the political investment you can do. There's some, you want to call it mazel, you want to call it fate, you want to call it hashgacha, you want to call it, you know, deep reflective wisdom. You need to be constantly alert that you can make an error. Presidential candidates know this. You can be primed to kind of take a position, and then you do one interview and you say the wrong thing and you fall down. And this is what Esther was about to do. Vatoma Esther, Esther was about to say, who's the enemy? Who's she going to blame for everything that's happening to the Jews? Who do we think she's going to blame? Haman. So it turns out she was actually about to blame Ahasuerus. She was about to say, you want to know who's killing my people, who's jealous of Vashti, who's jealous of me and everything? You! It's almost like the David moment where Natan comes in and says, you know who stole the sheep? You! And says, you're in charge. What are you doing letting him, you know, rough run all over the kingdom? You're meant to. And he goes, Ish, Tsar of Oyev, a wicked enemy. And then she says, Haman Harazeh, this evil Haman. And it seems like almost she was like, she was about to go, you, and then comes to Haman. We see that she was about to point at Ahasuerus, and an angel came in and said, oh, point at Haman. Don't blame him. He is a fickle, thin-skinned, reckless king. And don't think that with all the setup there, you can convince him. Sometimes people are unchangeable, and you need to kind of almost judo-like use their powers in your favor. And he's fickle and reckless and thin-skinned, make him jealous of Haman. And that was not her plan all along, it seems. Vahamelech, or maybe it was her plan, and in the last moment she was just going to get angry with the king, and an angel intervened. Vahamelech kam v'chamato, the king got up angry. Vahamelech shav niginat ha-melech, and the king returned from walking out. And this is a strange moment in the Megillah. I was reading the Koren graphic novel version to my kids recently, and it is a strange thing. She says, Haman is a wicked guy who wants to kill me. And once Ahasuerus responds, he goes outside for a walk. That's a very strange reaction. What's he doing? But he's trying to process this, it seems. Makish Shiva Likima, Seva Likima, we are comparing his return to his leaving because it says, Hamelech kam v'hamelech shav. Why are we comparing the two? Makima Bechema af Shiva Bechema. Just as he left angry, he came back angry, meaning the walk did nothing to calm him down. It says, Hamelech kam v'hamelech shav, to tell you nothing had resolved on that walk. And usually what happens if you go for a walk? You calm down. Why didn't he calm down? You go for a walk, you say, I'm angry. I'll be back in 10 minutes. I'm going to go have a nap. I'll go for a walk. And then we'll talk about this. He goes for a walk. Hamelech kam. Hamelech shav. And he's still angry. Why is he still angry? Da'azel, second angelic intervention. Va'ashkach l'malachei asheres de'idnu le'kigavre. He went and saw these angels who appeared as people. V'ka'akrele l'nandu busai. And they were cutting down the trees of his orchard. So he goes outside, and again, he could have calmed down. There's no guarantee that you've set this all up in the perfect way. Psychological warfare, strategic planning, party invitation set, conversation, perfect timing. You're about to accuse the wrong guy. Angel has to help you. The king could have calmed down and moved on. The angels are outside cutting down trees. Ramalu, and he says, Mavadachu, hey guys, what are you doing cutting down trees in the king's orchard? Amrule, depaktin on Haman. Haman told us to for the tree. And he thinks, oh my gosh, Haman is having my orchard cut down. Atalavete, so he got back and he's now angry because Haman, the guy he's just been told is the enemy, is ruining his garden. So he's irritated. Vaman nofel alamita, and he comes in. And what Haman is doing what? He's falling on the bed. And nofel, the Gemara says, nafal. It should say he fell. Why did it say he's falling? An angel came and pushed him down. I mean, Haman's not an idiot. The king's angry. You're going to really fall onto the queen? He was trying not to, and an angel came and pushed him. So we've got three angels so far. One, make sure Esther accuses Haman and not Ahasuerus. A bunch outside cutting down trees, so Ahasuerus gets irritated, and the walk doesn't calm him down. And the third is the one who pushes Haman onto Esther's bed. Amar Ahasuerus says, Vay mibete, vay mivra. He's ruining my life outside. He's cutting down the trees. He's ruining my life inside. What's his focus? It's not like, oh, he's trying to kill my wife. He's trying to kill the Jewish people. He's taking my wife. Not that she's going to be hurt, but that's my wife and my trees. And now I'm getting irritated. And his narcissism is building. Vayoma ha-melech ha-gam lechvashet ha-malke imi bevayet. You're trying to also, conquer my queen inside my house. What do you mean also? Because, you're ruining my trees. So on the one hand, we're making him incredibly shallow. Because saying, also my wife, what can compare to your wife? The trees in the garden. So not very much, but he's getting irritated. V'yom ha-charvona, and at this point, Charvona chirps in. Amar Belaza, af charvona rasha ba'ota itzahaya. Yishno Charvona was involved in that whole scheme with Haman originally, and here he just pivots away from Haman's plan. Kivin Sharash and Kaimai Tatomi Yad Barach. As soon as it stopped working out, he kind of flees Haman's side. That's why it said Veshlach Alav Lo Yechmal Miyad Avruch Yivrach. It describes a scene where all the advisors run away. This is in Eov, but it's describing a case where people who are, go with the wind of allegiances, runs away. Full stop. Haman is hanged on a tree, at which point the king goes, "Ah, I feel better now. Thank you, everybody. And we can all carry on back to the party. The trees are fine. My wife's still mine. We're good." Shtei shichachot halalu lamba. Why does it talk about two angers? What is shachacha? Two things. Second line from the bottom. Achat shel malko shel olam. When it says the king's anger was settled, one is God's anger and one is Achashverosh. Some people say no, he was still agitated about Vashti. He was still like, why did she disagree with me? My response to that didn't go well. Everyone in the kingdom was laughing at me for having told them that the husbands have to be. The whole thing is a mess. And at this point, Haman's gone. He just feels closure. He says, I'm done. Now we can move on. Full stop. Now we've got red. That's probably where we'll get up to, which will take us to the middle of the next Amud. And this is a side point where we're now going to have some details about Yosef meeting his brothers in Egypt. The question will be why, and maybe we'll get to an explanation. L'chulam, to all of the brothers, Natan Ish Chalifot Smalot, he gave, this is a quote from Bereshit, where Yosef meets his brothers and gives all of them clothing when they come down to Egypt. L'viminyan Natan Chamesh Chalifot, but he gives Benjamin five cloaks. Good idea, bad idea? Advisable, inadvisable? Why?
Similar to what happened with Yosef.
Right. Efshar, is it possible? Last line. Davash and Isaba Ota Tzadik. The thing that led to the downfall. His pain. Yikar Shabo, he's going to make the same mistake. Meaning he understands, as we're about to say. Damarav ba machasi amarav cham ramayam amarav. In the name of Rav, they said, Bishvil mishkal shnei slai mila. For just a small measure of fine thread. Shehosef Yaakov leYosef, that Jacob gave to Joseph, Mishar Achiv, more than his brother, Nikala, Davi Yerav, Atenu Mitzrayim, we all ended up in Egypt. Every part of our pain in Mitzrayim was caused because a little bit of extra thread. Meaning, you've got to be very delicate with children and siblings, not to show extreme favor. And here, a small measure of thread got us down to Egypt, and Yosef is giving Binyamin five times the amount of clothing to his brothers. Like, this is staring him in the face. Why is he making the same mistake? Is it possible? Amr Binyamin by Yafet, Binyamin ben Yafet says, Ramez Remez lo, he was giving him a hint. Atidbo ben that statement when Shatsim and Flame Melech Hamishal Vishim Malchus. No, he's giving him an indication that generations from now, he will have a descendant who will leave the king's palace wearing five layers of royal clothing, which is going to be how it links to our story. Shnei Mars, this is Mordechai Yosef Levush Malchus Chelet, and then it lists on toward the end of the Megillah, Mordechai comes out in five layers of royal clothing. Says, oh, that's what Yosef was doing. Does that resolve the problem, by the way? Doesn't seem to be, yeah.
The fact that Yosef's dreams were true, turned out to be true, doesn't help the whole situation any more than the fact that Yaakov is giving a hint to Binyamin that will turn out to be true.
Yeah, it still seems to be you're giving him five times the amount of stuff. And if you say, no, I'm just saying this because he's going to have a really great descendant.
Just give you some background information.
Right. It could be, no. I'm not favoring him. I'm giving him a message. In theory, if we were to spend more time, you could say he saw something in Binyamin that he was kind of losing hope, or he was saying, I see I'm not going to have any kids. I'm not going to invest in family life. Like, what's the point? And Yosef had to kind of prod him and respond to that and say, no, that there is greatness in your future. And the rest of the brothers were fine. And Binyamin sees himself as a small kid who wasn't around for the sale, who hasn't been involved in this forgiveness, who feels like he's out of the picture, like I'm not part of the group. And kind of Yosef is compensating for what otherwise would feel like he's an outsider. So I guess you could read it that way. But on its face, it seems like there's more to say here. Continuing the encounter, first one line is Malchut in the grave. Yipolal Savrei Binyamin Achav, and he falls on the shoulders of Binyamin to cry, or the necks of Binyamin to cry. Kama Savarin Havilu Binyamin. How many necks has Binyamin got that Yosef is falling on his necks to cry? Amar Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar says, Bacha Shnei Mikdashim Shatin Liyo Bechalku Binyamin Vatin Lecharev. He's crying on his necks, meaning what are Binyamin's pillars, the things that hold him up? Is the fated sanctuaries. They're going to be built in his domain, in Yerushalayim. So Yosef is crying not on his necks, but about the pillars that will be built and then destroyed in his territory. Binyamin bacha al savarav, and Binyamin cries on his neck. And you're telling me if neck means a bet mikdash, why is Binyamin crying on Yosef's neck? Bacha al mishkan shilo shatiliyot b'chelko sheyosef v'tilachov. Because there is going to be a mikdash built in Yosef's territory, which is Shiloh. So they're both crying. And in this familial moment, what are they both crying about? The center of Jewish spirituality and sacred life being destroyed, which is connecting us back to the importance of being connected to that. And Yosef responds to the brothers when they say, you're angry, you're going to hurt us. Sorry what we did. You know, let that all go under the bridge. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar says, he's responding to them. The same way I look at Binyamin, who's nothing involved with my sale. He's saying, trust me, I look at you, I look at Binyamin. I see you both the same. You're both innocent. Don't worry about it. Kifi amadabar alachem, because my mouth as it speaks to you, kifi kein libi. It says kifi because he's saying, trust me, this is not cover, this is not artifice, I feel this way in my heart of hearts. We'll finish with the red very quickly. He sent 10 donkeys of goodness from Egypt to his father. My tov mitzrayim, what is the good of Egypt? And he sent him good wine. Again, why is this coming up here? We began with wine in the party in Shushan, and we're ending with wine where wine was sent to his father, suggesting there's nothing problematic with wine in and of itself. And at that moment, his brothers bowed before him. This is why people say, Ta'ala be'idna sagidle, when the fox has its moment, bow down before it. Meaning, if you're thinking that everybody's lions, if the fox has its moment, you know, don't think to yourself, but I'm a lion, I'm not bowing down. If the fox is having a moment, you bow down to the fox, at which point, Tala, you're saying, fox, my b'tziritim achava, why is Joseph the fox in that metaphor? Why are you saying he's like worse than the brothers? So they're all lions and he's a fox. It can't be. Ela iit mahachimah, this is what you mean. Vishtachu Yisrael arashim itah, this is when Yisrael, when Jacob comes down to Egypt and he bows to Yosef, Amr ben Yom Yavid, Amr Laza, Talib ibn Sagile, you should bow to the fox in that moment. Meaning Yaakov, who is superior to Yosef, bows to him because he's having his moment and you should do that. What that says about the relationship is interesting to explore, but we'll leave that. Vinachem otam vidaber libam, Yosef comforted them and he spoke to their heart. Amr ben Yom Yavid, Amr Laza, Melam b'sham alem dvarim shemakablin alev. In that moment, he comforted them al libam. He spoke to them by something that would move them in their heart. He says, "Ma sarat ner lechanu lo yuchlu lechavot ner echad." There are 10 of you. You couldn't destroy me. So ner echad hechachol lechavot asar ner. So how is one of me going to destroy 10 of you? The math doesn't make sense. So don't worry about it. He kind of comforted them by saying, "You'll be all right." All right, let's do 3 more lines very quickly. Just get through. And the Jews, they had light and joy and celebration and preciousness. Amr of Yehuda, these are 4 different things that the Jews got when Haman was removed off the scene and them celebrating Purim. What was that? Ora is a Torah. They got Torah back. Because we know Ora is a reference to Torah. Simcha ze yom tov. They had Simcha. That means they had a day of joy. So how do I know? It said Sasa and Zumila. They were able to do circumcision again because Haman had banned that. That's how do I know Sasa means Mila? Because Sasa nochelim ratecha, that which is communicated through Amira. Usually, most of the commandments, right, Daber Hashem Moshelem, well, there's only a few where it's right, Yomer, and one of them is Brit Milah, so I know that's what Sason refers to, Yikar. What does it mean? And they had preciousness back, Elu Tfilin, they were able to wear Tfilin again. How do I know that Yikar means Tfilin? Because we said that Nikra Elacha, it will be called upon you, and everybody will be scared. So this is Moshe speaking to the people, Vatanya, Rablozal Gadol, Omer, Elu Tfilin Shabarosh. When the people see you wearing Tfilin, that's when they'll be scared. That's what's called up. All right, 3 more lines. Ve'parshandata asor b'nei Haman. Sorry. And parshandata b'nei Haman. Amar b'bi Yefin. Asor b'nei Haman v'asor b'sarach l'meim r'b'nei Shima achat. You have to say it in one breath when you read all 10 names. Ma'itama, why? Kol v'hadi hadadi nafgin ishabalai. Because they all died in the same moment. Meaning you say all the names in one breath because they all died at the same time. You make it a dramatic moment. Amar b'yochanan vav da viztad sarach l'mecha b'zikifa. When you say the vav in of vizta, the name vizta, you have to lengthen out the sound of the word vav. Kumudra de Lavar, it's like the oar of a ship. My Tama, why? Kulavachad Dekifa as Kavu, because they were all on one pole. You know, I'm sure you've seen in the Art Scroll descriptions, illustrated versions, one pole with 10 of them hanging on. That's why you have to say the long Vav. Amrab Chanir Bapapa, Dorosh Rishila Ishkva Tamirta, Kol Hashirat Kol Nidavar, we're going to finish with this yellow. If you think about the songs in the Torah, you think about Az Yashir, Shirat Devora, you think about our other Shirim, that the structure of the writing is, I'm sure you've got a picture in your head, it's kind of like middle, side, side, middle, side, side, middle, it's kind of built in a tower. Chutz Mishirazu Malchei Kanan, apart from the book of Joshua, and here, when you've got the 10 names of Haman, it says their name, and it's kind of like two poles with a big gap in the middle. It's just brick by brick or ledge by ledge. My Tama, why? Because it's not stable. Like the Az Yashir, the way that's written is it's a stable, you know, if you're playing Jenga, you have a middle and the sides, it's pretty stable. If you have, you know, just two pillars, you know, one little knock, the whole thing falls over, everything's going to collapse. And what we'll start with next time is Haman's Achashverosh response, and we're going to have one more angelic intervention, and then the response to Mordechai as he continues a life of politics after the emergency has passed. Thank you for your patience, and I wish you all a wonderful week.